Blog Talk Radio.
An all-access football exclusive.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Digest Show. It is February 17th, and we are 1 week away from the NFL Scouting Combine, the premier meat market this country sports has to offer. It'll be, as always, in Indianapolis, and we'll have our on-location coverage from there next week. We're going to talk a lot about that in the next couple of weeks, and even a little bit today in the show as we get ready for that big next step in the NFL draft process. Joining us shortly will be offensive lineman from Nebraska, one of the top guards in this 2011 NFL draft. That is one Keith Williams from the University of Nebraska, a big-time Cornhusker. We're going to talk to him about this whole process, you know, how it's been so far and getting ready to go out into Indianapolis and prepare for those NFL teams. You know, there's no experience like it. There's no job interview out there that is like it. Also today, we're going to touch upon some of the hot topics around the NFL draft, including Daquan Bowers, Jake Locker, Wesley Saunders now eligible for the draft. No, when I said hot topic, I wasn't talking about Mel Kiper making Cam Newton his number 3 overall pick or Sporting News moving Marcell Dareck to number 1 pick in their mock drafts. I'm talking about some real draft news. Also, you know, I just want to touch on this little whole boycott issue when it comes both to the combine and now the whispers of the NFL draft. You can tell we're desperate for some news here in NFL coverage, being that there's no off season for the NFL players and the teams other than the draft. We also have Cam Newton signing the biggest deal ever for a rookie, sponsorship-type deal. And Elite Pro Football has some interesting combines coming up that I want to let you guys know about. And also, don't forget to check out NFLDraftBible.com. While I have your attention, everybody, I want to take a moment to tell you all about the biggest celebration since New Year's going over at the NFLDraftBible.com. We are relaunching, folks. Yes, better late than never, but we'll be fully operational with a brand-new look and updated rankings, projections, and scouting reports in time for the NFL Scouting Combine. The NFLDraftBible.com is where college football and the NFL collide. Stay tuned for the NFLDraftBible.com for our upcoming relaunch and new membership details. Have any questions? How about a player recommendation? You want to, even if you just want to tell us we don't know what we're talking about, drop us a line at media@NFLDraftBible.com. That'll hit off all the head honchos and let us know what you think. And also, I want to let you guys know about our On the Clock tool. We've got a bunch of stuff starting this week. As always, you know, we have the player spotlight, player interviews all over the place. But a couple of new features starting this week, starting later today, is our On the Clock series. We count you down to the NFL draft with our On the Clock in-depth show that examines all 32 NFL teams. Each show will feature top beat writers and pro players as we discuss team needs, key free agents, and the plan of attack entering the upcoming 2011 NFL draft. So log on to NFLDraftBible.com for programming schedules. You can go to blogtalkradio.com/all-access-football. You can go to NFLDraftBible.com, go to the On the Clock show page, and you can get all the schedules there. And it's starting tonight with myself. I will be hosting it at 6:30 Eastern time, so 1.5 hour after the draft digest ends. We will go on, put the Carolina Panthers on the clock. Joining me will be a beat writer from the Charlotte Observer, Mr. Darren Gant. He covers the Panthers and knows them better than anyone else inside and out, so he's the perfect guy to have on to talk about the Panthers. And, boy, is there a lot to talk about, because I like to say, and you'll probably hear me ask Darren this, what do you get the team that has nothing? They went 2-14 last year for a reason, so they have a whole lot of needs and a lot of interesting things there. And just as a little teaser while we're on this topic, you know, the Cam Newton is becoming a more and more intriguing possibility at that number one pick. Could they be tempted? I mean, I was one who always thought he would need to have that big bowl game, that kind of Jamarcus Russell-esque, Vince Young-esque, unbelievable blowout game where you have people saying, wow, geez, look how great this guy is. You can't pass him up. How could you possibly pass this guy up and let him slip? You know, that helped Russell get to number one when he completely outplayed Brady Quinn. Turns out it didn't matter if you drafted Russell or Quinn, you weren't looking too good. And Vince Young kind of shredding that USC defense inside and out, using his legs to really make hay against the Trojans and win that game for Texas. You know, my money may be the greatest, best single-game performance I can recall from an NFL quarterback. But I thought Newton was going to need to have that kind of game to vault himself to number one. I always thought he was kind of a sleeper to get to that spot. But, you know, he had a, you know, I can't say Cam had a bad game, but he did have, you know, he had an okay game. He did enough to win. He made a couple throws. He made a couple of runs, converted a couple of first downs. Wasn't dominant in the goal line. Remember, they got stopped on that goal line play, and I thought they should have ran it more with Cam. They did try it once, but I didn't think it was going to be the kind of performance, but I think now teams so desperate for quarterbacks, and I think depending on the salary structure of how things end up going with the new CBA, if we're talking about already having a new system implemented where these rookies are going to be paid on a scale, not necessarily, you know, the how it was in the old day where you get these big bonus money. So Sam Bradford might be our last, you know, $40-$50 million bonus baby. You know, I think you're more likely to take a kid like a Cam who's a boomer bust type player. Let's be honest. I think there's lots of things to like. There's some things not to like about Cam, both on and off the field. And if you're not paying him that kind of cash, if you're not putting up that kind of guaranteed money in his pocket, you're kind of giving yourself some cushion. You're lessening the blow if the kid turns out to be a bust. Now, obviously, you know, busts, when you use those top picks, you know, you want to hit as much as possible. But the problem with those big bonuses, with that big guaranteed money, is you get the double effect. Not only do you waste a pick, a high pick, a valuable pick, that's a big commodity in the NFL, particularly when you're a team that's down and are trying to, you know, get back up into things. But when you pay that kind of money, you know, you take that cap hit, and it affects what you can maneuver and do with other teams. And this also allows a team to do more off, you know, in addition to the draft, to complement this young player, maybe to put some more talent around him and maybe make it a little bit easier for that player to succeed and do well. So, you know, it'll be interesting. We'll talk a little bit about Cam and his possibilities of joining the Carolina Panthers. And obviously the other two guys in the mix, and these are all positions that the team needs for Carolina. We're talking DaQuan Bowers, the defensive end from Clemson, who's got his own issues now heading into the combine, as well as my man and our number one player right now on our big board, defensive tackle Nick Fairley out of Auburn, who is just a beast on the inside. You know, for those of you who've been listening to me for the last couple of years here on NFL Draft Bible, All Access Football, I'm not the biggest guy in terms of saying, you know, he reminds me of so-and-so or he's the next so-and-so. I kind of think each player is different and unique, but he does kind of remind you of a Warren Sapp type. I won't say Warren Sapp, but Warren Sapp type, in that he is an impact player from that interior position where he can kind of get into the offensive backfield and make things happen, incredible quickness. You know, I think Fairley's a really unique player. I'm not going to put him in the same class as Ndamukong Suh, but I think he can be that type of rare interior defensive lineman that can change a game. He can be a game changer. And speaking of interior linemen, we're going to have an interior offensive lineman coming on right now, and he kind of wants to shut those guys down and make sure they're not impact players. We want to now joining us, and we want to welcome to the show one Keith Williams out of the University of Nebraska. Keith, how's it going today? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's going real well. Going real well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. I know it's about a week until you head out to Indy. Do you know exactly when you're leaving and heading off for Indianapolis?
Yeah, I know. I head out Wednesday, the 23rd, and go down there and get started on this journey.
How does it feel? You feel ready, or are the nerves starting to kick in? Does it feel coming close, this unique experience that you're going to have next week?
Well, I'm actually just eager to get out there and show the scouts, show the GMs and everyone what I'm about, and who's Keith Williams, and I'm kind of looked at as the underdog, but I'm going to come out and show what I got and show what I've been doing all this time, doing training and everything else.
I just want to let the listeners out there know I'm in the chat room, so if you want to log in, if you got a question you want me to throw Keith's way, jump in the chat room, let me know, and we will do that. Keith, you know, tell us a little bit about your preparation for the NFL Scouting Combine. What have you been doing leading up to this point?
Well, unfortunately, I stayed here at the university, and I used Coach Dobson and strength training staff here, and it's been an amazing experience. They helped me with my 40, with the pro agility, with the three cone. I mean, with everything. And, I also worked with an offensive guy who played in the league a couple of years, probably 9 years, Brandon Stye, and he helped me. Different drills that I'd be seeing at the combine. And, I mean, this here, the Nebraska family really took care of me during this time.
And how different are those workouts compared to what, you know, you're doing, what you would have been doing during the year? I mean, is there a lot of stuff that kind of translates and stays the same, or does it feel like you're almost doing a completely different regimen?
It's a little different, not much. I know that he really wanted us for his leg strength to kind of build that power back, get that power back in your legs. I know he really worked flexibility, Dobson, that is, worked flexibility real well during this time to loosen up the hips and, you know, the recovery. And, I mean, it's been tremendous. And for us during the season, I mean, it was kind of a lighter scaled, you know, sessions we had compared to now. Now it's like I'm throwing everything at you. I'm going to get your body to react to this, and hopefully everything shows when I get to the combine.
We're talking to Keith Williams from the University of Nebraska here on the NFL Draft Bible Draft Digest show. Keith, we're talking combine. Keith, what do you think is the most important drill for you there? I mean, everybody talks about the bench press a lot, and, you know, obviously being an offensive lineman, a guy that's battling in the trenches, that upper body strength is important. Would you say that's the biggest thing for you out there?
Yes, I do. I think on top of the bench press, I think also your 10-yard dash, how you're doing your 10, to show your explosiveness. Also, I think the three cone and Eljo kind of shows offensive linemen, especially interior guys, hits, how they move, and, you know, for us, like, pulling and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think it's all a big part of that, including the bench press. So,
do we have a prediction for you? How many times are you going to throw that bar up?
I really don't want to say now, but it'll be a lot.
It'll be a lot. All right, we're expecting a high number from you then. Keith, how about the other parts of this process, you know, going through that, you know, weigh-in and the measurement, the so, quote-unquote meat market, and dealing with so many teams in such a short period of time? You know, I know speaking to some guys after the combine, it's like they really didn't have much downtime. Whenever you're not in drills, preparing for drills, you're getting pulled in to speak to this team, to that team. How do you prepare for that kind of stuff?
Actually, that's pretty hard. And like, I kind of looked at the schedule already. Nankeep was very busy during that time of, there at the combine, and, it's going to be hard. I mean, can't really, train late nights of, interviewing with, certain, scouts, agents, or, you know, whoever, coming at you, but, it'll be one heck of an experience.
Yeah, it should be definitely a unique experience that, you know, from some ways, thankfully, right, only once in a lifetime you got to go through this. Keith, before we let you go, you know, tell us a little bit about this whole experience for you kind of since that college season ended with Nebraska. You know, outside of the combine, what has this draft process been like for you? What have you enjoyed most about this process?
Oh, I mean, I kind of look at it as getting recruited all over again. It's kind of, you know, the whole college process in the beginning when, you know, you're trying to pick a school, but, you know, you're picking an agent now. And as you kind of, you know, going into all this training to get ready for college, I'm going to do all this training to get ready for the pros. I mean, it's kind of hand in hand. And, I mean, it's been amazing been an amazing experience. I had a great season at the University of Nebraska, and Nebraska means good to me. And it's been fun.
So you're working out there in Nebraska, and is it safe to assume you're still finishing up school? Is that right?
Yes, yes, I am. I have a stats class and an art history class, and then I graduate in May. So it's that's a big thing I need to do to finish up the education part here, and also I thought it'd be nice to also train here. So.
So you're juggling a little more than the typical guy who's getting ready to go out to Indy then.
It's not that bad. I mean, I'm not carrying a whole full schedule, you know. I'm just holding on to these two classes, so it'll all pan out. Be just fine, I think.
Well, hopefully that art history will be able to come into play. Maybe you can show them you're kind of a renaissance man when you're speaking to those NFL teams.
Yeah, we'll see how those conversations go.
Hey, you never know. They go wacky. I'm sure your agents have been telling you. You know, sometimes they ask you questions like, you know, what kind of animal do you want to be? And you know, a lot of weird ones there. You know, they're asking Gerald McCoy what kind of jock he wears under his pants last year, the former opponent who you faced from OU. So there's some wacky questions they ask you. Who knows if Art's on that list? It may be.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I'll be ready for those questions too. So.
Well, and let me ask you a little bit about your college career too, Keith. I mean, Nebraska, big improvement. Bo Pelini came over there while you were in Nebraska. You were a three-year starter for the Cornhuskers on the offensive line. Definitely a much improved program when you left it from when you got there. Talk about that ride there in Lincoln.
Well, when Bo Pelini came in, he did an excellent job of getting us together, being more of a family, playing for each other. And a quote that he always uses, stay focused on the process and compete every day. And I think he really did a heck of a job of putting together his staff. And it was an amazing experience changing this place, getting different, winning the North every year. And, you know, it's having fun, playing with your brothers, you know. That's what it's all about, and bringing that tradition back here at the University of Nebraska, winning. So. I think Bo Pelini and his staff did an excellent job, and I'm grateful to have him as a coach.
And being an interior guy, what were practices? What have they been like the last couple of years going up against guys like Ndamukong Suh and, you know, this past season, even Jared Crick? Even with Suh gone, it's not like you got a break, right?
Oh, yeah. Like I was saying, we competed every day. I mean, every aspect, whether it was position drills, whether it was team, I mean, I've been against the best, and I'm kind of grateful for it. It kind of shaped me as a player. Going against Sue, going against Crick, I think Pierre Allen, Phil Dillard, Larry Asante, some of the good players that came out of Nebraska, I mean, and playing next to some of the best guys. I mean, it's amazing. And Bo Pelini has, I mean, these practices were intense. I mean, we were getting after it and having fun at it. So,
we're talking to Keith Williams from the University of Nebraska, one of the top offensive linemen for the 2011 draft. Keith, how about some of your fellow teammates who are going to be heading to Indy? You got Prince Amukamara, who could be a potential top pick. Niles Paul, a senior wide receiver on the offensive side of the ball. Have you been able to stay in touch with those guys throughout this process?
Yeah, we kind of talk and chat and kind of keep in touch. And it's really fun because, you know, everyone has their own process and how, you know, we're going to see how it all pans out when we all meet up down there and see how everybody does. And, I mean, we're going to be rooting for each other. But, I mean, we're pretty much on our own little journey heading to the draft and having to – so.
And tell us a little bit about yourself off the field, Keith. That's something we always like to give the listeners. You know, when you're not – you know, studying Van Gogh and you're not getting ready to do the 40-yard dash, what could you find you doing? What do you like to do when you have some downtime, other than sleep, of course?
When I have a lot of downtime, I either I'm sleeping, trying to get up on my rest, or I like to watch a lot of television, a lot of comedy movies, things like that.
So what's your favorite TV show then? If you can only watch like one or two shows each week, what would you narrow yourself down to?
Probably say Family Guy is the number one. Probably the number one.
That's always the classic.
Yeah, so but yeah, it's fun. I just try to keep myself busy, keep my mind once I'm done kind of with football kind of free and kind of keep it up in the air and, you know, and so my head's not all cluttered and I'm stressing out on anything.
I'm a Brian guy myself. Who's your favorite character on Family Guy?
Like Peter.
Dude, the dog holding the cocktail always gets me. I mean, you gotta love that guy.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's real funny, and I think I like Peter and maybe Stewie also because he's always trying to take over and I guess playing mind games on people. So, and maybe it's
yeah, I can't argue with those. I can't argue with those. Stewie is hilarious. You gotta admit that. Keith, have you gotten a chance, before I let you go, I want to ask you too, have you gotten a chance to speak or meet with any NFL teams, or do you think that process is going to start for you next week?
Well, I talked to a few coaches beforehand that just kind of wanted to talk to me. And I know I talked to the offline coach with the St. Louis Rams not too long ago, but they just wanted to talk to me beforehand, before everyone kind of jumped at me, so they could get their fair, you know, fair share of questions in, and then get the reps in after they get finished watching film or evaluate me. So,
all right, Keith, thanks a lot for giving us some time. We definitely want to wish you luck next week when you head out to Indianapolis, and I'm sure you're planning on getting a lot of rest this week and get some rest, because I don't think you're going to sleep much once you get to Indy.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks a lot. And that is Keith Williams from the University of Nebraska, one of the top offensive linemen for the 2011 draft. He is going to be heading to Indianapolis. He's going to be performing at the combine there among the, you know, best athletes out there in the NFL, the top or so 300 guys. Pretty much most of the players heading out there are expected to get drafted, and Keith is among that group. And we'll definitely be following to see how he performs. He didn't want to give us a number, but he said high with the bench press. So we're going to be keeping an eye out for that. And, you know, he mentioned the three cones, showing that flexibility. We'll check out what he's doing there. And the 40-yard dash. You know, a lot of times we throw out the 40-yard dash for these non-speed positions. But, you know, what Keith brought up is interesting is that 10-yard split, those first 10 yards, showing that kind of explosiveness. That's something that, you know, does factor in for offensive linemen and as well as defensive linemen. You want to see how they do from an explosiveness end. And you're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest Show. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. I want to remind you about the relaunch that we are having coming up. It's better late than never, as I said, but we are coming with a brand new look, updated rankings, projections, and scouting reports in time for the NFL Scouting Combine. We are where college football and the NFL collide, and stay tuned for those upcoming relaunches and new media membership details. We got a bunch of podcasts coming up tomorrow. I believe we got 6 or 7 on slate, including Quentin Davey from Northwestern, Cecil Shorts, a small school wide receiver who's going to try to make a name for himself next week in Indianapolis, and DeMarco Sampson out of San Diego State, who was part of one of the most explosive passing offenses in the country in 2010. So check out those podcasts and many more coming to you just tomorrow. And throughout the week, we're going to have Colin Kaepernick on next Monday, quarterback out of Nevada, and he's going to talk to us before he heads out to Indianapolis, and we'll get the scoop from him in terms of how he's preparing for the combine and the whole process heading out there. I also want to remind everybody, while we're doing some house cleaning here, check out those On the Clock starting today with myself, and Darren Gant will be joining us from the Charlotte Herald. We are talking Carolina Panthers football, the team that has nothing, that needs everything. Number one overall pick, which way are they going to go? Are they going to go Cam Newton? Are they going to go Spain Auburn, Nick Fairley? Could they go Daquan Bowers, a local kid out of Clemson? It'll be interesting to see what they do. Also, this week, check out our draft diary. Good stuff. Posted yesterday. We have linebacker Mike Muhammad from Cal. We have offensive guard Steve Schilling from Michigan, both writing their first diary entries. You can check that on NFLDraftBible.com. Schilling talks about the whole process, picking an agent, learning about this process from a veteran offensive lineman, similar to what Keith was talking about. Mike, just like Keith, and Mike gave us his favorite TV show and kind of what he likes to do. So good stuff from Mike Muhammad, linebacker from Cal, Steve Schilling, offensive lineman from Michigan. Keep on the lookout for more Draft Diaries to come. I believe both the guys are going to give us a second entry this weekend to kind of let us know about them heading out to Indianapolis, ending their pre-combine training and getting ready for this process. You can read their draft diary entries and follow those two guys and hopefully some more coming along the way on this NFL Draft Bible draft process, 2011 NFL Draft. All right, let's get to some of that news that I mentioned earlier at the top of the show, and then after that we're going to look at our big board. We're going to have one more big preseason pre-combine big board next week. We're going to talk about the current big board and some of the top players on the draft. If you want to call in with a draft question, get on the line. Give me a holler. The number is 1-347-945-6275. That's 1-347-945-6275. You can also jump in the chat room where I am and throw any questions my way if it comes to the NFL draft, and I'll be happy to chat with you there and answer your questions. Now, at the top, you know, let's start with Daquan Bowers, potential number one overall pick. We learned this week that he had off-season arthroscopic knee surgery following Clemson's bowl game against South Florida. It's believed that he played much or most of the season with a partially either torn meniscus or MCL. And his status for the combine, while he is still training, we haven't been able to confirm if he will be able to perform in Indianapolis. It'll be interesting to see how this impacts his status moving forward. I honestly don't, you know, unless the medical doesn't check out well, I don't think if he doesn't perform in Indy, it's going to really hurt his status that much. I still see him being a top five player. I still see him being a potential number one overall pick. I would be surprised if this were the reason, if him not being able to perform at the combine, as long as he checks out A-OK, as long as he checks out healthy before the draft, I don't see this being a reason knocking him down at all in terms of his draft status. He's a young kid that really broke out this year, came in very, very highly touted. Many people had him as a top high school kid, the top recruit coming into Clemson when the Tigers signed him. And, you know, he was somebody that people thought was going to be kind of an impact player, instant impact immediately for the Tigers. You know, he was a solid player that didn't really turn into that superstar that people expected this year. And for him to have done it in a season where he wasn't maybe 100%, wasn't healthy, to me makes it that much more impressive. I think that's a skill, if you ask me. And, you know, you're talking football, that is a skill, being able to play when you're hurt or when you're injured or when you're less than 100%, because that's going to be most of the lead down the stretch of the season, especially your marquee players. You need them to be able to play through injuries, you know, and stay on the field and not just play but still find a way to contribute, because, you know, you are that marquee guy. You are that key guy that the team needs to perform. And, you know, let's be honest, in a cap league, the funds are allocated to you, so they need the star players to play up to their pay grade. And Daquan Bowers showed this year that maybe he's that kind of player. He's somebody that could kind of do that, and still very young kid, just 20 years old, played very early on in terms of didn't have to redshirt and was a young freshman stepping in. Another big name, once touted, once talked about as a potential number one overall pick, one Jake Locker out of the University of Washington. Well, he's no longer in that conversation. We asked that midseason, is he in the first round conversation? He's still in the conversation, but he's slipping. Make no mistake about it. The closer we get to the draft, it seems like the more likely he is to go in round number two. Him and Ryan Mallett are two quarterbacks that seem to be slip-sliding away when it comes to being potential first round picks. Now, Locker still, I think he's somebody that has a chance to really perform well. That's why I think in Indianapolis, that's why I think it was a really smart decision for him to say that he is going to throw at the combine, that he's going to do all the drills There's whispers, there's stories about a 4.4 range running, excuse me, in the 40-yard dash when it comes to Mr. Locker. I know my people in Washington have been talking up his speed and athleticism, so he, excuse me, he may end up being the fastest quarterback there in Indianapolis. That'll be interesting to see if that pans out, but I think he'll do very well in that environment. And I think it looks like we have Gabbert and we have Newton as the top two guys. Obviously, depending on who you ask, some people like one as being the number one guy ahead of the other. You know, some are Cam guys, some are more Gabbert guys. You're more likely to see somebody, I believe, have Cam as your third or fourth quarterback than you are Gabbert. He seems to be more of a consensus top two guy, while Cam Newton, some see him as the best player in the draft, but I think there's a bigger range in terms of the opinions when it comes to him. Now, after that, I think it's really wide open whether you want to like a Ponder, who, you know, if you're listening to the show, you know, I'm a big fan of Christian Ponder and was impressed with what he did in the Senior Bowl throughout that week. I think he has a lot of the intangibles, but whether it's a Ponder, whether it's a Mallett, whether it is a Jake Locker, maybe even throw a Colin Kaepernick, who we're going to talk to next week, in that mix. I think that number three quarterback, that quarterback who could end up sneaking into the first round, but most likely will be, at worst, an early second-round pick, who that guy is, I think that's pretty much up in the air. And there could be quite a few teams interested in a quarterback late in that, trying to trade up to late in that first round. You know, there's a lot of teams in the top 10 that could use a quarterback. Most likely only two are going to get one. Maybe even fewer than two teams are going to get one. You know, even a team like the Carolina Panthers, they took Jimmy Clausen last year. They still may be interested in looking for another quarterback, even if they don't go that direction at number one. Staying with the combine news, we have Wesley Saunders wins his appeal, and he's now eligible, the tight end from South Carolina. This is pretty intriguing news, I think, myself. I mean, Saunders is somebody that a lot of people thought was a borderline first-round talent, definitely a second, at worst, third-round type kid. Had some character issues, got himself suspended, missed the entire 2010 season, his senior season. But let's be honest, this really isn't a strong powerhouse, deep tight end position after Kyle Rudolph, the kid out of Notre Dame, who's coming off an injury himself, so he's got something to prove. But I think Saunders is still an intriguing talent, and you can make a case for him being as talented as any of the other guys in the top five outside of Kyle Rudolph. So I think this is big news, him getting eligible, not only getting eligible, but getting eligible before the combine, and it'll be interesting to see how he performs there. I think that'll be a big indication to teams how he spent his time, how serious has he matured, in addition to looking at his physical attributes. He's a big kid when he's a player. Let's see what he checks in on. Let's see what kind of athletic ability we see from him. But Saunders got that appeal, and obviously it was a paperwork issue. It got cleared up, and I'm glad the NFL was able to do that, because sometimes these leagues can be silly with the technicalities and the paperwork. Luckily, that's not the issue, and that's not going to hold up this kid's career, and this will give him a chance to show what he could do in Indianapolis. And yes, folks, there will be, in fact, the NFL Scouting Combine. I know there was talk and rumors about a potential boycott. I thought it was kind of silly myself. I think it would be a disaster for most of these players, and it would be a disaster for a lot of these guys that I'm talking about, the Keith Williams of the world, the Quentin Davies of the world, the Cecil Shorts, the DeMarco Samsons, the Jake Lockers, the Wesley Saunders, the Colin Kaepernicks. These are the guys that would really suffer if there was no Scouting Combine. So I think it would be, you know, really unfair for the Players Association to ask the agents and the players to kind of show some unity from this perspective. I mean, it really wouldn't make sense. Like I said with the Bowers, you know, if he's not 100% healthy and I'm a team in the top five looking to pick him, honestly, I don't want him out there. I don't want him running around at less than 100%. If he's potentially could be my most valuable asset, my top commodity in a couple of months, you know what I mean? So that type of kid, the Bowers, the Fairleys, the A.J. Greens, the Patrick Petersons, sure they could help themselves with the big performances in the combine, but they don't need it. And who knows if a lot of these guys are even going to perform. We're not even sure if all of these guys are going to do everything. We often see big-name quarterbacks not perform. We saw a lot of that last year. In some cases, you know, in the Bama Fever, it wasn't even a big-name quarterback who didn't perform. We see guys like a Rolando McClain drop out late and not perform. Didn't seem to really hurt his stock. He still went in the top 10 for the Oakland Raiders, ahead of where a lot of people projected him to go before the draft. So I think these top guys, these big-name guys that have really established what they could do, that are physically talented, that have shown the production on the field, they don't have a lot in terms of the drills that they need to show teams to impress them. And in some respect, I hate to say it, but in some respect, they could almost hurt themselves more than they can help themselves. But these other kids, these guys that even second-round pick guys on, have a really opportunity to vote themselves sometimes a full round, sometimes even more than a full round when it comes to the draft, you know, with their performances in Indianapolis. And now, you know, now that rumor has been kind of quelched, now it's could there be a boycott with the actual draft? So April 28th rolls around. Guys like you and me, we've been waiting, you know, months for this day to come. We're ready to go, and they're going to pull the plug on it. I don't see that happening as well. I don't think it makes sense. I don't see why the rookies should get involved in this. And if the agents advise them to, I don't know if it's a good idea because, I mean, yes, ultimately this CBA, this collective bargaining agreement is going to impact these players how they do. But let's be honest. I mean, the current players are already selling them out, right? The current players seem to be happy with the idea of a rookie cap, which, I'll be fair, I think is a fair deal. I think it probably should be in place. But if the current players are going to do that to these rookies before they get in, and a lot of these current guys did get these big bonuses when they were coming out, they were more than happy to accept these large bonuses and get paid heavily before they proved anything on the field. Now they're saying, wait, we want the next group to prove something, even though we didn't have to. And now you're going to ask them to what, you know, boycott the draft? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if that story gets any traction as it gets closer. I'll try to speak to some of the agents that I know and feel their attention, see what they have to say about it. But I really don't see it being a story. Like I said, I think we're going to see more and more of these types of stories pop up because we're not talking about, hey, so-and-so is a free agent. He's going to go sign with this team. Could this team trade for this player? Should this team sign this guy and give up the draft picks because he just got franchised? And if he is signed, will Team X keep, you know, re-sign him? Those are really not stories now. We have the guys floating out there in terms of which guys have been franchised, the Peyton Manning, Michael Vick, Haloti Ngata, those guys, you guys know the list, David Harris from New York. But I think since we know there's going to be no player movement, there's no real intrigue to that. So you got to dig a little deeper and figure out exactly what's going on. You got a little bit deeper in terms of finding stories and finding something of interest if you're not really a draft guy. And then, you know, some little off-the-field news with Cam Newton showing his marketability. Darren Revell from CNBC is reporting that Newton has signed with Under Armour, a record deal over $1 million, over the million Reggie Bush got from Adidas. We're not exactly sure what that number is, but it is a record number that we do know. And Cam, I get it. You know, I think Cam, you know, I'm not the biggest Cam Newton fan, and I'm open to be convinced on him because I do see the measurables, the impressive athletic ability. He was a dynamic quarterback. Anybody who didn't vote him for the Heisman Trophy, anybody who didn't have him as the first-team All-American quarterback as a college player, I think it was a joke. So I'm not necessarily a Cam hater. Did I think he deserved to get suspended? Probably. Did I think it was a farce that the NCAA let him play? Yes, I do. Do I think if Auburn was 8-2, that he'd be done for those last couple games? Yes, I do think that. But at the same time, I don't have any hate for the kid. I didn't root against him. You know, I was happy to see Auburn win the championship. I was happy to see him get the Heisman Trophy. I felt bad his dad wasn't there because of the circumstances. I understood why his dad wasn't there. It was fair enough. He created this. He had to live with it. But, you know, it was unfortunate, I think, as a son and father, you know, moment that you'll never forget in your life. He wasn't there to experience it. But, you know, at the same time, none of that, none of that has anything to do with how he's going to be in the pros. None of that has anything to do with it. And there are some character questions, but, you know, Cam is a very charming kid. He's a good-looking dude. He looks like, let's be honest, but, you know, I don't want to sound funny, but he's a good-looking dude. He looks like he could be a model. He's got a great smile. He's got a charismatic personality. He's fairly well-spoken. So I could see why a team, why a company would want him as a pitch man. It makes sense to me. And it'll be interesting to see. I wonder if he's going to be able to win teams over when it comes to that character question mark, whether it be the laptop stealing arrest, whether it be the allegations at Florida that he cheated. That hasn't been substantiated, but, you know, that's been thrown out there. And then, hey, you know, as far as the NCAA is concerned, Cam Newton means nothing when it comes to play for pay and Mississippi State. But, I mean, you got to be pretty naive to think that the father did all this and the kid had no clue, absolutely no clue what was going on. I mean, even when they spoke to him a couple weeks later, he said they still hadn't spoken about it. So really, you didn't know what was going on. You didn't pick up the phone and say, hey, Dad, what are you doing, man? You're trying to sell me? What's going on? What are these reports I'm hearing? You know, tell me that it's not true. Tell me it's not possible. I mean, to think that they hadn't spoken about it, not only did he not know beforehand, but apparently he didn't know afterhand. So I find that hard to believe. It'll be interesting to see how that kind of juxtaposed with his personality and his likability once he sits down with NFL teams and the decision makers, teams that could be tempted to take him with a top 10 pick. And listen, we're probably going to kill it to death. We're going to be talking probably a lot of Cam Newton over the next couple of weeks. Also, another news, as I mentioned, is the top elite pro combine. Very interesting. I think an intriguing idea brought out by the NFL, partnering up with the NFL. They're going to have these kind of mini combines in Atlanta, in Baltimore, Chicago, Dallas, Columbus, Ohio, as well as LA, the city of dreams. For the kids that aren't invited to this NFL combine in Indianapolis. So it's kind of being touted as the priority free agent combine, which I think is a great opportunity for a lot of these other kids that maybe got snubbed for whatever reason, didn't have the exposure, didn't have maybe the right connections, didn't have anybody to do them a favor to get them in, and now they have a chance to kind of show what they could do. It's not in Indianapolis. It's not quite the same. They won't get the same exposure there. I'm sure there won't be the same number of scouts, teams, coaches, et cetera, there, but it's still another opportunity, and I think it's fantastic. Why not? Let's give these kids an opportunity, and let's not peg them priority free agents just yet, because there are kids that do get drafted and that are successful who aren't invited to the NFL Combine. You know, look like someone like O.C. Umanure, a second-round pick, who didn't get invited to the combine. Wes Welker didn't get invited to the combine. So it's not necessarily a death sentence, and this is a nice gesture, a good opportunity. It makes sense, in my opinion, with the amount of money that's being thrown around, the importance of scouting. Why limit yourself? Why not get some more information on these guys that may end up being sixth or seventh round picks, or even guys that are priority free agents? We see how that important it is in the NFL, teams in the playoffs. A kid like Sham Fields was a priority free agent. James Starks was a late-round draft pick for the Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers. You're listening to NFL Draft Bible Draft Digest. I am your host, Daniel Moglione. And don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com. Check out the latest news coming soon. We're going to have that relaunch that we've been talking about throughout the show. We also have our on-the-clock series starting today. And special today, in addition to the podcast, we have our on-the-clock column where we kind of break down the Carolina Panthers, a five-year plan, their booms and busts, a look at their offseason, as well as their 2011 picks and some players of interest, which we'll break down later in the show, and also the draft diaries, which I talked about with Mike Muhammad from the University of California, as well as the offensive guard Steve Schilling from the University of Michigan.
After years of blood, sweat, and tears, it all comes down to this. Draft Weekend Odyne. To celebrate this year's Gridiron Draft, the Fantasy Sports Channel is rushing more than 24 hours of live draft action your way.
All right, I'm back. I'm your host, Daniel Leon, here talking NFL Draft. The 2011 NFL Draft And let's talk about some of the guys on our NFL Draft Bible big board. And as I said, this is always kind of fluctuating in flux. As I said, you know, big news this week, quote-unquote news, with Sporting News making defensive tackle slash defensive end Marcell Dareus at Alabama the number one guy in their mock draft. You had Mel Kiper jumping Cam Newton to being a potential top five pick on number third overall. So, you know, this stuff is always fluctuating. It'll be moving before the combine. It'll certainly be moving after the combine. You've got pro days. You got more information gathering. So this stuff is always in flux. But it's always fun, I think, to look at. It's always fun to kind of debate. And I think that's why the NFL draft is so popular among its fans and the NFL people. Right now we got, I think there's a consensus top four. I think that's pretty fair to say. There's not too many places that don't have Nick Fairley, A.J. Green, Patrick Peterson, and Daquan Bowers in their top 10, if not their top five, if not their top four. I think you know, those guys are pretty locked into being high picks, to being the top guys at their position, even though at defensive end there is a lot of competition for Bowers. So I will say that that's one thing where maybe not being at the combine isn't the best thing, because there is a lot of competition at that defensive end position. Could a kid kind of wow people, or with Bowers standing on the sidelines? It could happen, even though, again, I don't think it's going to hurt him that much. Fairly, as I said, my favorite guy really stuck out to me with his performance early in the season against Mississippi State. Just a penetrating force into the offensive backfield, a real difference maker. Not an Ndamukong Suh. That's just not fair. Suh is a once-in-a-lifetime type player, so I can't put Bowers, I mean, I can't put Fairley in that category. But, you know, I think he's definitely a unique kind of kid and a difference maker along that defensive line. Our number two guy is A.J. Green, wide receiver out of the University of Georgia. He was another kid that suffered some suspensions, missed some time. Missed, I believe, off the top of my head, four games last year for selling a jersey for $100, $200, something in that range. Didn't really seem where the punishment fit the crime. But he was very explosive once he got back onto the field, showed what he could do. Most people had him as the number one receiver heading into the season. He kind of stayed there and maintained his status. I think A.J. Green is clearly, to me, the number one receiver in this draft. He's explosive. He's got the most upside in terms of being a big-time playmaker. And he's the safest guy, too. I think there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to be a number one receiver in the NFL. You know, whether he turns into a Randy Moss type or a Calvin Johnson type, obviously that needs to be played out. But I think he's a legit number one receiver in the NFL. And I think he's got the upside to be among the top three or four guys in the NFL within a couple of years. You know, as an Andre Johnson maybe gets a year older and then Randy Moss is retired, I think A.J. Green could be part of that next crop to emerge as that big playmaking weapon. He's got it all. Great hands, great athletic ability, can high point the football, has got the speed to blow by people. So A.J. Green, the complete package, and we got him at number two right now, our number one wide receiver. And number three, staying in the SEC, we got three straight SEC guys, and it's Patrick Peterson, the corner out of LSU. Now, there's some people that think he may be the most talented guy in this entire draft. Extremely physically gifted, great physique, great body for a corner, has the ability to cover, could probably be an all-pro safety if you wanted to use him there, might even be able to play some offense, you know, arguably the most dangerous return guy in this draft. So he could really do it all from a multitude of positions. Patrick Peterson, number three from LSU, can a corner go that high? That's interesting. That's always an interesting question. You know, a team like Carolina could use a corner, particularly if Marshall is gone in free agency, if they decide they're not going to keep him and focus on some other players who are their free agents. But you just don't see that. You just don't get the feel that he's legitimately going to be in that mix to go number one overall. And he may fall out of the top five because of that. I think that could hurt him because there are so many big guys. There's so many interior guys and exterior, you know, talk about defensive ends. But there's so many guys that play along the line of scrimmage that could be top five picks in this draft. And if they all perform well, You know, there's a lot of people that go by the philosophy of, you know, build from inside out. So maybe if in the corner is a bigger need, you could see somebody going with the Claiborne or going with a Darius or going with a Robert Quinn ahead of Peterson if that's the kind of guy they think could fill in a more important position than corner. Number four, we have our man Daquan Bowers, who we talked a lot about from Clemson. Real interesting kid. I think, you know, ideally he probably wants to play in a 4-3 defense, but I think because of his size and his strength, he's a candidate to be a 5 technique guy and play a 3-4 defensive end. Some people also think Nick Fairley could do that, the defensive tackle. But Bowers is one of those rare 4-3 defensive ends that may be big enough and strong enough to play in a 3-4 defense. Most of these guys, when we talk about them playing 3-4 defense, is shifting out to play outside linebacker like a Robert Quinn, like a Ryan Kerrigan. But Bowers is that rare sack guy that could be a 3-4 defensive end. That's where really he could be an unbelievable weapon. You know, could he be like a Richard Seymour type and what he has done in the 3-4 defense? And those guys usually don't get the big payday that the 4-3 ends do, but Richard Seymour did. I just saw he signed a 2-year deal for $30 million. So that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world when it comes to your pocketbook and your bank account. Rounding out our top five, and this is an interesting one. I think this position could be one that moves around a lot, and it's Adrian Claiborne, a guy we've moved up and down and up and down our board. It could be continuously moving around. Somebody who I really do love a lot, you know, being honest, and unbelievably impressive last year. He's kind of similar in that Seymour type role, and where he's kind of, you know, has the quickness to play on the outside, almost big enough to move inside and play deep tackle. So maybe he's another guy that could play in a 34 defense, that 5 technique position. He's upwards of 280 or so pounds. Looked really explosive and quick as a junior. Decided to his return, which looked like a smart decision. Hey, why not? You know, who knows where you're going to go? You had a chance to go in the first round. But if you return, you could be a dominant guy. You could be, you know, some people are even saying this year's Ndamukong too. And, you know, could you be a guy who approaches the number one pick, maybe goes number two overall after Andrew Luck if he declares. But it never really manifested itself from Claiborne during the season. You know, as talented as he was, he never had that big, big-time moment as a senior, and it kind of showed in Iowa season. They weren't nearly as successful as they were the year before. And I think, you know, Claiborne's lack of big plays was definitely a big reason why. Still, though, a very, very talented kid. You can't deny that. A lot of ability from the Iowa Hawkeye, but he just didn't really do it this year on the field. I think we're still more going off reputation, more going off what he did in 2009. Just getting a swig of water there, so I don't cough into the microphone one more time before the show's over. You're listening to the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Digest Show. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. Next week, we're going to be talking more and more Combine, kind of previewing it for you, shaking it down for you, and have a bunch of special guests, all Combine related, to talk to you next week. At number six, we have another senior who also had an up-and-down season and has been moving up and down draft boards in a lot of top tens when the season started. After a struggling start, which included an injury, people were dropping him to the back end of the first round. Sometimes outside the first round at all completely. Definitely a kid who played early on in his career as a college defensive end, has already made the transition to outside linebacker. That kind of looks like where he fits the best as a 3-4 outside linebacker, where he can kind of get let loose, attack the quarterback, attack the line of scrimmage. That's what he's best at. He's best at getting after the quarterback and getting into the offensive backfield. He's not the biggest kid. He's not the strongest kid. He may struggle when he's engaged with offensive linemen, but he's got a great first step, and he's got a tremendous speed and quickness off the edge. Good moves. He's got a nose for the football in terms of getting to the guy, and great closing speed. You're not going to run away from this kid once he has you in his sights. And he really, boy, did he come on strong once he got healthy and got adjusted to the defense. The team, like, they let him rush a little more. Once he got healthy, he didn't drop back as much. I remember speaking to Ray Childress during the season, former Texas A&M Aggie himself, All-American there, top high pick in the NFL draft. His kid's on the team. He still lives down there in Texas, so he's all over them. He basically said, Dan, it's a sin when this kid drops back in coverage. He's that good of a pass rusher. You got to let him get after the quarterback. Well, that's what the Aggies did at the end of the year, and he kind of, like I said, the way Claiborne's kind of lack of big plays hurt the Hawkeyes down the stretch and cost them a few games, Von Miller's ability to make plays really spurred on A&M and allowed them to beat Oklahoma, allowed them to beat Nebraska, and have a really strong finish to their regular season in the Big 12. At number seven, we have Mr. Marcell Dareus out of Alabama. Once again, a kid really that had it's amazing, but, you know, he had kind of an up-and-down junior campaign. Started out suspended, got banged up and injured early on, played through some pain, played through some injuries. But once again, we're seeing that, you know, teams want to see the talent. They know the talent, and they're not worried necessarily about the injuries or lack of big-time production at the college level if you have the ability, if you flash the ability. And Marcell is another one of those type of hybrid tweener defensive linemen in that he could be a 4-3 tackle, or he could be a 3-4 defensive end, which you saw a lot of playing time at Alabama for Nick Saban. I think that's the best spot for him. And he's another one of those guys that there's not too many guys in the NFL that could play 3-4 defense and still be an impact sack master. And that's something that Mr. Marcell Dareus can do, which is why many people, including ourselves, have him in the top 10. Some may even say he could go number one. At number eight, we have Robert Quinn, who did not play at all in 2010. He sat out the entire season at UNC, suspended for off-the-field issues, but doesn't necessarily come with a character label. That's not the case. He's a little bit of a different mold than a Bowers, a Claiborne, or a Dareus at defensive end. He's definitely pure speed off the edge. He's actually closer to the linebacker Von Miller. He's bigger than Miller, but in terms of his skill set and what he brings to the table, he's more of that edge pass rusher with that quick first step and the speed to get to the quarterback, which is why some people think Quinn may ultimately end up playing in a two-point stance and playing some linebacker himself at the next level. We got two more here in the top 10. Julio Jones, our second wide receiver, our second player from Alabama, and I believe our now fifth player out of the SEC in our top nine. So it should come as no surprise the SEC is dominating that. We got, you know, two ACC players. We got one Big Ten, one Big 12, and we got five, no Pac-10, and no Big East, which is no big surprise. And we got five from the SEC. And Julio Jones, you know, not quite as long as A.J. Green, not quite as fast, and we'll learn a little bit more about both of those things once we get those arm measurements, the heights and weights and the 40 times from Indianapolis, but definitely a little thicker than A.J. Green. He's got a big build. I've heard comparisons to Terrell Owens. I could see what people are talking about when they say that. Really big, strong frame where he almost looks like a tight end out there and can really get physical and overpower defensive backs, definitely at the college level, and I think we're going to see it even at the NFL level. And finally, rounding out our top 10 is Ryan Kerrigan, yet another defensive end out of the Big Ten, gives them two guys in the top 10, both at the same position. While he's behind Claiborne in this process and in terms of being ranked as a prospect, he definitely did not get outshined by Claiborne. In fact, he had the better year and really came on strong. And, you know, out of all the players in the top 10, he probably helped himself the most with his play on the field as a senior in 2010. He clearly was not a top 10 guy. I mean, these other nine guys were all projected to be potential top 10, in many cases, top five, top players. Kerrigan is the one guy that really played himself into this top 10 with a big-time senior season, very athletic, more than given credit for, and he's another guy that people think, hey, I think he's got enough athletic ability not only to be a 4-3 edge rusher, but maybe to be an outside linebacker and get off the edge from that position. So, you know, that rounds our top 10. Nick Fairley, A.J. Green, Peterson Bowers, Claiborne Miller, Dareus Quinn, Jones, and Kerrigan. Folks, we only got a couple seconds left. Reminder, go to NFLDraftBible.com. I want to talk to you next week when we're going to break down the combine anymore. a little more, same time Thursday at 5 o'clock. Don't forget, in 30 minutes on the clock with the Carolina Panthers, joining me is Darren Gant of the Charlotte Observer. We're going to be talking Carolina football. Also, check out our draft diaries on NFLDraftBible.com. Talk to you next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Yeah, pump it up, yeah, pump it in.